Okay, we open the meeting right now, and we immediately, given what has been said, we move to the agenda point, the EFREC discussion paper on separate financial statements. Welcome to Philippe Camilio Aldes, and I give you the word to present the paper.
And thank you, Martin, and thank you all for your invitation and for putting this topic on your agenda. For this session, we have uploaded three papers. We will focus our discussion on the slides, but we have uploaded a couple of the slides and the discussion paper. I may make some reference to the discussion paper during the discussion. But the slides, if we focus on the slides, these slides explain you why EFRAG and its partners decided to launch a project on separate financial statements. And it also provides key messages and main conclusions of the discussion paper. We also have included six questions for you. But before we go to the first question on page 6, I would just like to highlight some of the points included in this slide. So, as you might be aware, in Europe, most member states commit or allow the use of IFRS in the annual accounts. So therefore, the use of IFRS in the annual accounts is well advanced in Europe. And nonetheless, there have been some concerns about separate financial statements, as usually the focus, the ISB focus is on consolidated financial statements. So we got some remarks on common control transactions, for example, transfers of property, and also EFRAG had a discussion paper on this UCC project. It was focused on consolidated financial statements, but every time we had references to a separate financial statement, we thought it was not possible to deal with everything, so we decided to deal with this project. So this is why the main reason why EFRAG decided to have this project. And if we go to slide 3, the starting point of the project was setting the scene and providing the basis for the discussion. This was really important because often we had misunderstandings about what was annual accounts, separate financial statements, individual financial statements. So every time we would start a meeting, people would make different references. So that we needed to find a common terminology. We also had lack of information about what was happening in different member states. So we had to include Appendix 1 of the discussion paper where we have an overview of what is happening and what is being applied in Europe. And so this was actually the starting point of the project. On slide 4, we have actually the definition of separate financial statements. We have used the definition in IFRS. Although there is still a conceptual debate about what separate financial statements mean, these financial statements are typically focused on providing the view of the individual entity and not of the group. And they usually focus on the economic value and the return of the investment. They are focused on the shares and the value of the shares, not of the assets that you own for your subsidiary. So, and in the research phase, we identified a number of users. We have identified those users in slide 5. We noted that loan providers, banks, and the legal authorities are typically the main users. And we also noted that separate financial statements are used differently by different users. Some of the users would only focus on dividends and would only focus on very, very specific information of the market, mainly, for example, if that company would be a cash generating unit, which would be different from the other entities within the group. For example, it was in the industry specific, etc., so they would go there. And others, they would look comprehensively to the separate financial statement. For example, if they wanted to provide a loan, they could analyze them together with consolidated, but they also could analyze only separate because it depends on where the loan would be, whether the loan would be on the holding company, whether it would be on the individual company. So it would depend on the analysis. But we got feedback that there was a good use of separate financial statements. So I think we can go to the first questions on page 6. So as a user, we support these conclusions that we have already stated, and we would like to know from your view and from your experience how users use and for what purposes separate financial statements.
Okay, let's, can you, on the first question, can you summarize the conclusions?
No, these conclusions are mainly about the use of separate financial statements that we have just referred, that the loan providers are the main users, that there are some users only used for dividends and for market information. It's basically about chapter two, whether you agree in a certain way what we have included here. You might disagree and say, oh, no, equity investors are the main users. Oh, no, let's say employees or bidders are the main users. I would like to, in a certain way, whether you agree with this kind of conclusions that we have included in chapter two, or whether you have different views or not.
So they are used, and the final point on that slide, in addition, we've highlighted that debt providers and legal regulatory authorities are the primary users.
Yeah.
So, to that
group. Anyway,
as an equity analyst, I have so far never used a parent company report or an individual subsidiary. I always deal with a group accounts all the time. So maybe that's a very strange definition, but I think, yes, probably this is more interesting for banks and others that issue loan to a company than an equity analyst.
Maybe an open question. Oh, sorry, Robert.
I'll let you do the open question.
Open question is, anyone in the room pay attention to the separate financial statements during the analysis?
Mark. Okay. I mean, yes, I look at them, but primarily for the reasons you said. So I'm interested in the available funds for distribution to shareholders. I'm interested in the cash on the balance sheet, and beyond that, I rely primarily on the consolidated accounts.
Do you want to talk to put your thing up so we can start?
If they are available, I would always look at them, separate financial statements, for two things. The first is to understand credit hierarchy and subordination and seniority of the debt. Obviously, debt in a subsidiary has structural subordination when you looked at it from a parent company point of view, and that can have a big effect on how you think about value in an equity story. So, for me, that's always an important thing to look at. And the second thing is, of course, distributable profits, points that have been made on this thing, but also. It depends on which entity. So some entities give you separate financial statements for key subsidiaries, which are sometimes not fully consolidated, but they want to highlight that information. That's also very important to understand cash flow and value. So a lot of companies that are based in the developed markets will have subsidiaries in the emerging markets. And if you consolidate that information, because of the risk profiles, it's very difficult to understand what's going on. So very often they'll have investments in associates, etc., and then give you the information, and it's quite useful to look at that information separately. Usually there isn't enough information to be able to do anything sensible.
Okay.
Just further on this point about the availability of cash and what's distributable and so on, clearly that is important. Not to repeat the point, but just to note, we've got that conversation coming up under the net debt point later in today. I was quite surprised that you haven't put trade creditors down as a primary user, because they've got the same issue as debt providers. I would have thought that, you know, they're dealing with whichever specific company they're dealing with. They're not dealing with the group on a legal basis. So they face those same risks that debt providers do. So I would have thought they ought to be in your primary user category.
Are they on your list of your range of users?
We have included in an appendix, because the point we started with having the whole thing in the main body, but the main body was becoming too big. So we just said the main conclusions in the main body, and then we put it up, employees, trade creditors, everything in an appendix of the discussion paper. But indeed, people have said trade creditors in common, and also a number of creditors are interested. But in terms of equity analysts, when you try to predict future cash flows and you have a group, I believe that probably depends on the structure of the group, because if all the companies are within the same industry, probably yes, consolidated financial statements, it will be easy for you to make future cash flows and then use one walk. But if the companies are from different markets, and for example, if the parent entity is actually an entity which is active and has subsidiaries which are in other lines of the business, I was just wondering whether if you would use the parent company, because it will be cash generating unit and it has specific risks and it has specifics, how do you say, it is within the industry, which probably the work would be different from the others.
This is a new question. We first had the report, please.
I was very pleased to hear Glenn use the word structural subordination of waterfall, because that's really what the issue, and I was going to jump on it, Peter, because I use them every time I get my hands on them.
But when do you get your hands on them?
Unfortunately, that is often the problem. Actually, it turns out that a lot of the analysis I'm currently doing is actually as a trade. So I'm actually a trade creditor. And I would not, so let me open a parenthesis, I would not include trade creditors with the employees and some of the others. The analysis that a trade creditor does is exactly the same as a bank creditor or some of the equity. You're doing a waterfall and you're trying to figure out what it is. It turns out that trade creditors sometimes actually do get them because you say, you sometimes have the ability to say, letter of credit or financial statements. Take your pick. And in that threat, you often do get the center. That's it.
Okay. Good.
Yes. Do I need this? I come from Japan, so we don't have the similar regulation that you have. But in Japan, the listed companies are required to publish the consolidated financial statement as a separate financial statement of parent company, not subsidiaries. And the equity analysts tend to look at only consolidated financial statements because, you know, that is, you know, the more important to determine the value of listed equities. But still, there are many equity investors and as well as credit investors who are looking at this parent company's information or separate company's information, because they say that this parent company information is pretty crucially important to find out that the credit situation, and particularly even for the equity investors, this information is so important because if they are value investors, you know that the survivability of the company is critically important for for equities. And this is my impression that if we could have a separate companies, separate financial information reports for the subsidiaries, that could help us, even for the equity investors, that could give us some insight when a company decides to sell, carve out these subsidiaries.
Okay. Thank you. Very much, please.
Yes. Certainly, as I am an equity investor, so I certainly use it. And I think from my experience, in the case of infrastructure projects, you find many times joint ventures between many companies. And usually you have some project finance behind it. And when we have those projects, the parent company or one of the investors, they assume some guarantees, which are usually off balance sheet. So I can give you an example. Sometimes when you're doing a road, you may have triggers related to traffic. So those are very subtle guarantees. And usually those things are hidden behind joint ventures, and they are not consolidated on the main parent balance sheet, but they may be material. So that's a practical example of a case that would certainly be of interest for investors that are trying to, you know, the numbers don't appear on the consolidated balance sheet.
May I, just to explain, because you say if you have an infrastructural project, that could be a single entity, but if that infrastructural project were, has like also a Christmas tree underneath, would you still rather look at the parent, or would you then look at the consolidated of that?
No, I would like to look at the project, the
as company
that holds the project balance sheet.
As a whole.
And know exactly what's the relationship between that company and the parent company, or the investee on that project, and the guarantees between the two sides.
Guarantees. Because what my question is, if you have a Christmas tree below the joint venture holding, Christmas tree, you understand what I mean, you know, like there's a lot of subsidiaries beneath. Would you still rather look at the separate financial statement of that holding company, or would you, in judging whether you want to commit capital to that joint venture, look at the consolidated financial statement?
I definitely like to look at the consolidated as well.
Okay. So, actually, you would then use the consolidated if they were available, and not the separate.
Or complementary. But I think it's like both,
right? Yeah. Both, of course, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
My point is that, you know, sometimes companies have an investment in a in another entity, which may have a separate financial statement. And that the relationship between the company and the this joint venture may have materiality. And sometimes materiality comes from guarantees, as the example I mentioned to you.
Okay. Thank you, Peter.
I just want to, I second a lot of the thoughts already formulated, and building on what Carl just said, I think, I don't know what the time frame is of this study here, but clearly the recent changes in joint arrangement accounting would make this even more important at this point in time, because we saw a lot of changes when companies had to restate numbers to equity method from, you know, proportional consolidation. So I think this is a very important topic, and if anything, these accounts have become more important for an equity investor as well to take a look at that. I think we've had a few anecdotal indications of that already. So.
Peter.
I just want to underline that there's no way for me to get my hands on the accounts of a subsidiary. Maybe if I wait until summer 2015, and if it is a Swedish subsidiary, I can dig into the database in Sweden, but if it is a German subsidiary or any other subsidiary outside Sweden, no way I can get the information. I'm not sure I want it. I can get the parent company information immediately, but again, that is the information that I never use. I only use the group. So how do you get your hands on the information? Where do you find the information?
It's not so much a question for us, though, is it? Because that's a
regulatory. It's available. All European countries have registries. You can get them in Czech Republic, in France, in Italy, in Spain.
I think Peter's point is timing.
Yeah, during the summer.
So, can I make a few observations? Because I actually, when I read through the information, it sits about that the investors want to understand the group structure. They want to understand guarantees intra-group. Investors want to understand the capacity for dividend, liquidity. Those are our true information needs. And investors would struggle to get the separate financial statements of 80 subsidiaries of which a corporate group would comprise. I mean, that's almost unanalyzable. So I think one way to solve this is indeed through improving the separate financial statements per entity disclosure. On the other hand, maybe some of this information needs can also be solved in the consolidated financial statements as disclosures. And instead of saying, well, let's disclose this relevant information and say, well, that's all covered in the separate financial statement of our subsidiaries. We don't need to include this in our consolidated. I think that's a danger. I think there are really this discussion paper highlights information needs that should be covered basically in the consolidated financial statement as a whole,
which is
to better understand group structure.
Which is exactly why I mentioned the discussion that we've got coming up about cash on today, because that's exactly one of the areas that the consolidated accounts could be improved in that would really help.
I was going to say, maybe to highlight something important about the financial statement, which is not in the consolidated statement, which is it gives you the contractual basis, which the consolidated accounts, for very good reasons, take away, because what the consolidated accounts do is economic substance over the legal form. And sometimes the legal form is actually quite important, particularly when you're a creditor. You want to know which assets belong to, you know, which assets you're secured on, which cash flows you're entitled to, which you won't necessarily get from consolidated accounts, and you need to understand that from the particular entity's point of view. So separate financial statements could play, and I think do play, that role. And for me, that's a very important thing. That goes back to that point about the waterfall and the cascade of subordination, because when you're entering into those arrangements, you need to know what the legal form is as opposed to the economic substance of the group as a whole.
Just a very interesting analysis. But I would think, basically, as you summarized very well, we need some kind of improvement on separate financial accounting, maybe standard, I think. So there, before we point to that conclusion on what kind of the accounting standard for the transactions on the UCC or anything, so you raised very good conclusion in there at the final page, the last page here. But I would like to know even among equity investors, if they provide some kind of a fair value of the investment on the face of the separate financial statements, they just still focus on credit analysis or some kind of guarantee effect. I'm saying, whether they might be interested in more equity valuation using this of the fair value of investments. That's before answering that question, do you have any kind of survey? What numbers on the separate financial statements? I mean, cost of fair value or some other IS39 measurements on their many separate financial statements?
My takeaway from some of the comments that people have made, and correct me if I'm wrong, is I think that there's different sets of information that are useful for different reasons. So I think what Gwen was just alluding to was, even though I hope that in some circumstances fair value information would be useful, ultimately you also care about what cash you can get out of an entity and what dividends can be distributed. So it comes back to the sort of broader economic perspective, but also with an eye to what the sort of legalities and cash flows look like as well. So it's sort of like two sides of it, isn't it? I think that's my take.
That's good. So actually, the separate financials generally we are perceived as a kind of a different purpose rather than the valuation of the consolidated financial statement. As a very good fundamental analysis of this board on all issues on separate financial statements. So just an interest in what the real information needs of the all primary users of this separate financial statement, use what they would like to have more. As you said, you know, you are satisfied with the subcategory structure. If we can provide separate financial statements for information needs, you just described, maybe that's okay, then maybe we can do that. But if you want more additional, some kind of information from separate financial statements, then we might need a more dramatic change in you know, maybe IAS. That's why I'd like to hear, you know, whether we need a kind of big change or a small change in IAS 27.
As you know, living in a country that's relatively a newcomer to the IFRS world, I must say that some quite often ask it about, well, you have individual financial statements, you have consolidated financial statements, and what's the need of this third set of financial statements? That's a question that's quite often used, and I don't know whether Carlos agrees, but you don't see them quite often in, you know, as far as Brazilian companies are concerned. This discussion, from a personal point of view, has been extremely enlightening because it looks to me that since we placed, say, 100% emphasis on control as a basis for consolidation, it's not that we're having second thoughts, that wouldn't be fair, but we created a kind of cone of shade in relation of information to companies that are not controlled. And as Carlos mentioned, more and more you're seeing joint ventures that are really not controlled by anyone. And I do appreciate concern of Refrag. The other paper about transactions between companies under common control share the same concern. It's how do you deal with these things that are not consolidated but are within the same, as you mentioned, Brisbane Street. That's it. For us, it's a different world. In Brazil, we're just learning what these companies, what these separate financial statements are good for and whether they should be required. They're not, actually, under our system, but what are they good for? What companies should... We had a long discussion about investment companies like that in situations of one of most well-known accounting experts shown that in other companies like Ben Despar and other investment companies, it doesn't make sense for you to consolidate things that are totally telecom and credit card companies and consolidate things like that. Question is, to what extent, seeing things from a provincial, if you will, perspective, to what extent this thing could or should be required from public companies in Brazil?
I agree. You had a really clear question, like, do we need a large change, a remake, or a few amendments? Can you just clear what small amendments, what kind of small amendments, what would be a large change, what would be a small change?
That's good, yeah. Some countries are fine just preparers to disclose their separate financial statements, but some other countries are not interested in separate financial statements. But this good analysis, fundamentally, you are analyzing all information needs of separate financial statements in addition to maybe consolidated financial statements. But basically, our general perception among maybe some board members, we don't need any more improvement except maybe some suggestion in the final page and saying, but this is a very good opportunity to explore more deeply whether we need to, you know, maybe the breaking the traditional convention of the about this sexual financial statement. That's why we're here. Some kind of explorative idea. If there's no, if there, everybody is satisfied with the current maybe IS, the framework IS 27, and with some maybe minor amendments, clarification, on their some requirements, I7, maybe then that's the good direction.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all I'd like to hear about your direction.
Can we, in our answers, focus on this particular question? I think we should, because we have to take a look at the time. Robert?
Yes. So, I've been furiously trying to collect some notes here. I'll twist this just slightly to try and answer the question at hand. Understanding the waterfall cannot be done through just a fair value of the subsidiary and cannot be done through equity accounting. So what's happening is that certainly separate financial statements become very important when it is a big or material sub. So in fact, I echo Carlos's comment about some of these infrastructures where there's a sub and there's stuff in the sub that just will never get to the top. But so the question about do we really need change? We really need a change. And I think to answer some of the questions we have here, we need really two things. We need more separate financial statements because simply consolidation doesn't give you the answer. I'm a very strong believer, by the way, in consolidation, and I believe that. But at the same time, these separate financial statements are important for the equity analysts. They're certainly important for the credit analysts. There's a second piece. So part of it is part of the solution is separate financial statements. The other part of the solution is there's something missing in the consolidated financial statements, and it goes beyond net debt. Net debt doesn't give you everything you need, but it's in that direction. But there's more stuff than just a single net debt number. And the reason for that is that. And I'll hark back to Glenn's comment. When people start talking about a waterfall, what they're not telling you, what I think that they mean is, you start thinking scenarios. You say, this is an issue when, and a single number doesn't get you that.
Okay, thanks, Robert. Sue?
I was going to say something actually similar to what Robert just said, or at least on a similar theme. I think we don't say who has to prepare consolidated financial statements, nor who has to prepare separate financial statements. So we can't make sure you're always going to get separate financial statements even if you want them. What we can look at, which I think is what Ifrag is getting at, is there a way to make separate financial statements when they are prepared more useful set of information, which I think is what you're getting at, which is a fair question. But I think our new conceptual framework talks about, you know, the validity of a consolidated perspective and that sort of being our main focus, but also the validity of a sort of direct control perspective, which is your separate financial statements. But while we're still in this frame of mind, I think the thing we've been challenged with in the past is we've certainly had some board members who have always said that they would like everybody to have to prepare consolidated financial statements and then attach all of the consolidating financial statements. So, you know, 500 separate financial statements attached. I think the challenge is also, I think the other thing, sort of, as well as thinking about separate, the other thing we should have in mind, so I agree with Paul referring to the discussion you're going to have this afternoon on the net debt reconciliation, is thinking of other disclosures that could usefully be provided in consolidated financial statements, which would help you with this understanding of the sort of structural perspective and the subordination, the dividend paying capacity, everything, in a way that actually can be digested, but is still useful. And there's a lot of sort of sympathy for that, I think, around the board table, but so far we've really struggled to think of a way to do that. So I think that practical suggestions on that front would be very appreciated.
It's amazing, an observation for myself, it's amazing to see that if companies need to raise debt, they are perfectly capable of providing a relevant group structure. It's if you ask group structure, and they will come up with exactly what you need when they need to raise debt. But the next annual report, well, it's very difficult to provide a relevant group structure. But it's amazing. It's just an observation. Any document will contain a relevant group structure in the prospectus, but. If you, from a standard setting perspective, it is difficult to make a standard that goes beyond please provide a relevant group structure, because it's very difficult to do that, including with the guarantees and Peter.
That's me.
Yeah, well, yeah.
as an equity analyst, given we have this era of disclosure overload, I would rather prefer to have the parent company information taken out of the annual report. That would say roughly 10 to 20 pages with information that I never use. And instead, maybe that can be put into a separate financial statement without any pictures or anything, just the figures like that, and put on the website or wherever if you want to order it. Because I don't really see the need for the parent company information.
But if I understand the ISB, there's no outspoken, there's no obligation from the ISB to include them. And there's probably not going to be a forbidding to include them. So it's up to the company itself and the legal environment of the country.
It's a regulatory.
Normally, it's a regulatory. That's how it is. From the country.
Regulatory.
Yeah. Yeah.
Often it's regulatory.
So the companies are fooling me all the time. I say, throw them out.
Carlos, please.
We can't.
Just in reaction to Sue's comments, I think a discussion around the materiality of these subsidiaries that may need to publish more disclosure on separate financial statements would be a way to deal with the issue. Because most of the time it's immaterial, it's just too small, so who cares about it? But sometimes those guarantees that the parent company is providing, or even the capital injections that the parent company is committing to that joint venture, are material. And if that's the case, investors would certainly like to have more information about that specific entity.
We've tried that in IFRS 12, but I'm not sure how well it's going.
Okay. Glenn. Just to add a point, which I think from a public policy perspective could be an important aspect of this particular discussion, which is that now that the political authorities want to limit the amount of support they give to financial institutions that are in trouble, this puts more pressure on the bondholders and creditors of those banks to understand what credit they've got, particularly depositors. And that's kind of the whole population. If you look at a set of financial statements, I think it's very difficult as a depositor to understand where you are in the credit hierarchy and what support you have in the form of assets. So mostly now we have a deposit guarantee scheme, which the state is effectively handing out to a depositor, but only up to a cap. So if you're one of those depositors that has more money than the cap in the bank than the cap, you ought to be interested in the kind of asset cover you have and the credit you have. And that might be, for regulatory reasons, a very small part of the bank's operations rather than all of it, because obviously some banks are very international. You don't get the claim on all the assets.
We still have 15 minutes to discuss. Maybe we can... for discussion's sake, assume that there's a valid reason for separate financial statements to have maybe more guidance from the ISB from. And what guidance should that be? Is that something that, because there are alternatives like at cost, at fair value, shall we move on in this direction? Yeah. Is it possible for you to highlight the different flavors that we can pick from as a CNEC and comment on those flavors?
Yeah. Okay. The input has been very good, thank you very much. But I think the key question now is what can be improved. And we've discussed with users, national standard setters, preparers, auditors, and we ask them what are the issues and how can we deal with them. And that was one of the chapters of the discussion paper. And so probably one of the things that people made comments was that whether separate financial statements in a certain way should be related to consolidated financial statements, whether the accounting policies should be related. Let's give, for example, if you were buy a business in the consolidated financial statements, transaction costs are going to be expensed. But in terms of separate, should they be expense or capitalizing investment? And this generates a discussion where we should have some kind of symmetry between consolidated financial statements and separate. And then this discussion also would be applied to contingent consideration and then So this was one of the key issues. We also have included in the slides the measurement of investments, transaction costs, contingent situation. We, for example, disclosures about dividends and dividends available to shareholders, taking into account any restrictions that might apply. People also wanted a bit of clarification about the terminologies, the fact that the ISB was not defining individual financial statements. People were a bit unclear whether they were talking about subsidiary or parent, what kind of financial statements are we talking about. There were also concerns about common control transactions in general, like transfer of property. If you're not having a fair value price, whether that's a capital contribution or whether it's just profit and loss. And BCUCC, well, I think you have already have discussed this in the past, but probably from the perspective of the consolidated, not the separate, also affects and also affects legal mergers. So, in a nutshell, I would like to know whether these issues, do you agree that this kind of information would be useful for the ISB to analyze, and whether you have additional things that you would like to see the ISB analyzing? About the measurement of investors, I'm a bit afraid of putting priority on fair value or equity or cost. Then you would have to develop some kind of criteria which would, but I don't know if you have any things that you would like to have improved in separate, in addition to these that we already have identified.
Anyone? May I make an observation, Robert?
Look, I read through the paper and I struggled with the reasons to do anything other than the mirroring of the same thing you do in IFRS. There's an inherent simplicity in if it's good enough for the general accounting, it should be that. And I looked at the arguments and I recognized that a credit user, bank, or truly a financial credit user would be interested in the legal structure more than the economic. You're doing the separate financial statements because all of a sudden the legal aspect is important, not the. And even then, I still was struggling to find examples when I really wanted them to do something that other than what generally would be done by IFRS. And part of the other sort of comment I made is I'm a little uncomfortable with the definition of users. I would have actually split your definition of users into two groups, primary and secondary. And the financial statements, the primary ones are the resource allocation ones. And they're the ones that should be driving the financial statements. And then there are secondary ones that are interested but probably shouldn't be driving the whole financial statements for some of the secondary ones. Regulatory, people who actually can just say, give me this table, and to some extent employees. Employees are interested in some cases financial, but in other cases they're not. So part of this paper, I think, was struggling to justify the needs of users that I thought were secondary in the process.
First,
you don't agree.
No, actually, again, fighting them off at someone like you're thinking, I think, because my gut reaction, not being a user of financial statements, but my gut reaction would have been that based on what I've heard, it's really getting this extra spotlight on what's the difference caused by this sort of legal and structural effect of the group versus this economic perspective we get from consolidated sort of financial statements. So I would have thought that you only want to change as much as you need to reflect that sort of legal structure. And you wouldn't want to necessarily introduce other noise, because as much as possible, surely you'd want to be able to see that actually this is the same information as the consolidated, I've just sort of pulled it apart to reflect the legal differences. Because if you start tinkering with the accounting as well, you're going to add extra noise, and I'm not sure that that's needed to meet the needs, at least, that have been expressed around this table.
Yeah.
One comment on very interesting comment, and you are asking us the symmetry of counting between these two separate and consolidated financial statements. But basically, if we assume primary users of these separate financial statements, maybe they might need some information on the legality of their own asset liabilities. So, just in a, this is a kind of another explorative question, because we are introducing substance of a form concept in the current conceptual framework. So the new exposure draft will come out soon. Because generally we agree that under the consolidated financial statements, substance is much, much important than the kind of a legal form. So maybe such information might be important. But under this separate financial statement, whether we should keep that idea, concept, the substance of a form principle is better than the, so because you're asking the symmetry accounting. So that may be your idea whether we should keep that kind of some big concepts under the, our current framework, whether we should keep them. But basically, we are, if we are focusing on the consolidated financial statements, such kind of concepts, principles are good. But I'm not sure whether maybe some, maybe debt analysts or some, you know, if they are going to use some information of this separate financial statement, they might prefer maybe legal information, a kind of a legal assets or legal guarantees. Maybe such kind of information may be more important than some information of substance of the some transactions. So that's I'm wondering whether you are, what do you think about this kind of symmetry accounting principles?
I give the example of the transaction cost, because nowadays in the IFRS you have different accounting for business acquisition and asset acquisition. And transaction cost is one of those situations where if you apply IFRS 3, you expense it. But then from the perspective of the separate, it is an investment, it's as shares. So it's not business combination accounting, it's more asset accounting. Therefore, you will have this difference. In the consolidated, the transaction cost will be expensed, but in the separate, should they be in a certain way capitalized because it's not a business combination, it's not a business accounting. So this is the kind of discussion that we had, at least, and some people were very in favor of having similar accounting policies in both of them. I think on the extreme point, we had people saying that you should have the same equity in the consolidated and separate, but that those were the extreme cases. Others were saying no need for symmetry. And this was, every time we would discuss a topic, this came up in the discussion.
So around the table, do people worry that the book equity of the separate financial statement differs from the book equity of the group? I mean, would that worry you as a user? It's perfectly understandable. Yeah. Perfectly understandable. It's different. So, if I observe correctly, it's just a consequence of the different view. It's just it's supposed to represent something different. Yeah. So it would be like rare for them to be identical. So yeah. So that's not so. Indeed, is an extreme view. Okay, but on the other hand, would people really worry? Would we find activating transaction costs versus not activating? Would the one be not useful and the other one useful, or vice versa? Open question. It's just what you, in the end, make the convention, maybe. And I don't know.
Honestly, I think it probably doesn't matter as long as there is enough information to be able to understand what has happened. But I take the point that Sue made very, very strongly, which is that the underlying basis of preparation needs to be the same. Otherwise, you'll end up trying to chase your tail down the little alleyways there. But you'd be different if you're providing something useful. But sometimes, you know, as long as you provided the explanation, it's fine, really.
So I think if I extrapolate your thought, it's very much in line with keeping as much of IFRS in shape and make a basic assumption that capital phase, we consider it as an investment, or you know, as an let's but keep as much of IFRS in shape. That's basically because else we end up with lots of interpretation problems. Because what else may have been changed for the separate? If this, what else? I mean, maybe it's that's the principle as well, and that's a principle we can handle, I think, as users. Agree?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. That's a strong signal, I think. We have 2 minutes, so I think we have to create a new problem, or we can move on to the next agenda. Shall we move on to the next agenda point? Any other questions?
Wrap up. You know, the last slide. You know, we just put our like, messages in terms of conclusions, and I think one of would like to highlight just one, which is every time you discuss any future standard or any future amendment, where it makes sense for separate financial statements to be applied, already create conflicts, because every time you have a new standard or a feature or an amendment, so probably looking into it whether it creates problems with these.
To be honest, that's the tail wagging the dog. I mean, we're not going to. I think we should not let separate financial statement issue drive IFRS standard setting as a whole for consolidated. I think it's the wrong way around. Consolidated should be leading. Yeah.
No, I'm not putting the question over afterwards after the discussion.
I think that my sense in this room is that it's coming more from assuming that the sort of main base is still consolidated and then just thinking about separating the structural layer of information that you're looking for rather than looking at a critical
Okay. We're going to move to the next topic in the agenda. Thank you.